Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's very special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Sussex County Cricket Club's all-time leading T20 Blast wicket taker, Will Beer. So Will, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
No worries. Thanks for having me. No, it's good. I followed you guys on Twitter for a while now, and I like a few of your tweets and enjoy your content that goes out. So no, it's great to be on here. So thanks for having me.
Well, exactly, Will. The feeling is definitely mutual. And thank you as well on our behalf as well for keeping up to date with the Twitter. And of course, you know, actually interacting as well does mean a lot. And we have actually wanted to do this episode for a while, but we thought this week we are recording this just 5 days away from T20 Blast Finals Day 2021. So perfect timing, I think.
I don't know if this is you've got the video recording of this, but you've got the perfect background, haven't you? You've got Edgbaston in full lights behind you there, it looks like.
Have indeed, yeah, looking absolutely gorgeous as always, the fortress.
Hopefully I won't be viewing it from this, like, to kind of look at it at that time of night. Hopefully I'll be one of the little specks out on the field on Saturday evening, but there we go.
Yeah, fingers crossed, Will, fingers crossed. And actually, for the first time this year, I'm actually going to be there at finals day. So, of course, we've got an all South group affair this year. We've got Kent versus Sussex, and we've got Hampshire versus Somerset. So it should be a very, very entertaining day indeed. And of course, fans are back. I mean, that's a massive thing, isn't it, Will? I mean, before we get into today's discussion, how excited are you about the prospect of playing in front of a sellout crowd at Fortress Edgbaston?
Oh, it's class. All the memories, I've played in three finals days so far, and they are up there with the highlights in my career. They'll be in the top 10 days, if not the top 5 days. You know, as a county cricketer who hasn't played at international level, it is as close as you can imagine to playing international cricket with a full house, with the intensity, the pressure, the buzz of the crowd. Yeah, and you're just in the spotlight for that one day, and you can imagine that's how it is to be a professional cricketer for England, you know, playing on the big stage. And it just gives you a taste as a county player what it's like. And, you know, you get to put yourself under that pressure and see if you can perform and how you handle it. And, you know, at the end of the day, as we all want to play and win matches and win trophies. So it's the perfect day to go out there and try and achieve that. So, yeah, no, really looking forward to it.
Well, that is fantastic to hear, Will. It really is. I'm definitely looking forward to it as well. Of course, I am neutral in this year's competition. The Bears, unfortunately, were downed by the Kent Spitfires in that quarterfinal encounter in Canterbury. But it's a wonderful day. It's wonderful to have fans back at the Fortress.
Yeah, no, if you say the fans, I think last year we played a quarterfinal against Lancashire at home. We lost. And around the ground at Hove, there's quite a few flats. So we had a few little heckles from a few people watching us. But, I mean, no more than 50 people. And, you know, it doesn't have the same feel about it. You know, when we went up to Durham for our quarterfinal, which was a bit odd playing Yorkshire at Durham. It was a very strange day, really, driving up to Durham to then find out that they'd mimicked the Headingley boundaries of Durham, and there was so much green space everywhere. The crowd felt like they were miles away. But to be fair to the Yorkshire fans, they did turn up. They were pretty rowdy. I was fielding on the far side of the pavilion for quite a bit of our innings, and in that far corner, there were loads of Yorkshire fans, and they were giving me quite a bit of stick, to be fair. No, it was nice to be heckled and feel the intensity of the crowd again.
Yeah, we've had that quite often here on the podcast, actually, about obviously place you don't want to be heckled all the time. And of course, you want to be heckled within reason, but it is something small that you kind of miss, don't you? It is that interaction with fans.
Especially when you've got beer written on the back of your shirt, you know, I think it gives everyone something to comment on. And the amount of times I've heard, "Fancy a beer, Will? Do you want a beer, mate? What beer are you drinking?" So, right, not heard that one before, lads. You having a good day? So I'm expecting Edgbaston playing the second game when the Hollies is already going to be rocking from about 10:30, 11:00 anyway. So I'm just going to get abused because people haven't been let out for 18 months. And then you've got some bloke stood in front of you with beer 18 written on the back of his shirt. You know, I'm there for a heckle, aren't I? So I'll be trying to do as much of my work in the ring, getting it back a point 45 to the spinners and staying away from the Hollies as much as I can.
Probably for the best, that, Will. The Hollies is a very unforgiving place, shall we say, especially for opposition cricketers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying that, no opposition this this time, though, is it, with your beloved Bears not being there?
Yeah.
It's going to be a neutral Hollies, hopefully.
You say that. There are obviously the travelling contingents from all of the four counties. So who knows, Will? Who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, well, 2018, when we were at finals day, the Sussex fans were loudest on show. So hopefully they can be our 12th man again and this time get us over the line one better than we did then.
Well, there you go, Sussex fans. That is the objective for Saturday, of course. Outsing every other fan base. That is the message from Will Beer and, of course, the boys at Sussex. But, Will, before we get into finals day, because, of course, that is going to be a massive, massive topic of discussion in today's podcast, I just want to transport you all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey, if I could, in terms of the Will Beer cricketing story itself. So, Will, what were your first memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Yeah, my dad played. So my dad played for Horsham. That's where I'm from. That's where I've been brought up. He was captain at Horsham when I was in nappies still. And mum just used to go down and watch on a Saturday. So I would be taken down in the car. And from as long as I can remember back, I would just always be at cricket watching dad on a Saturday, travelling around Sussex, watching him. Yeah, and always at cricket, just running around, had my bike in the car. Chris Nash is about 5 years older than me, would you believe? I know he looks about 15 years older than me.
There it is.
But yeah, get it in early. But from the age of about 4 or 5, I was there throwing balls for Nashy to smack around and chasing them. And he was sending me off chasing balls because he was down there a lot watching, playing as well. So yeah, just from a young age, I've always been around cricket. I've always been sporty. I play football, golf, rugby, squash, cricket, obviously. So sport was my life growing up, and it just happened that I was probably best at cricket. Yeah, and that just narrowed my focus down into cricket, really. So I've got dad to thank for getting me into the game, really. And then I guess just playing all sports, and just it was just a natural progression that cricket was the one that took priority towards my older childhood, I would say.
Fair enough, Will. And that is a very, very interesting and, to be fair, quite common journey into the game itself, that multi-sports background. And before we get into your cricketing idols and, of course, your journey into spin bowling, for any young cricketers out there, would you actually, you know, advise young cricketers to have that multi-sports outlook? Did playing the likes of football and golf and other sports help you in terms of your cricketing, you know, skill set?
Yeah, definitely. I played county squash as well till I was about 16, 17. I think anything that's hand-eye, make like keeping you active, keeping you fit. Like you watch some of the lads coming through, the young lads now, how athletic they are as fielders. I think to be able to play rugby, football, whatever it is, even athletics, anything, be interested in the gym and training in general, I think can only make you a better all-round athlete. And then these days you see some of the catches and the athleticism in the field from some of the guys coming through. When I was their age, it just wasn't, fielding was good, but it was nowhere near the standard that it is now. You see some of these catches that are being taken and you think, as a 32-year-old, cool, I really need to keep practicing here to keep up with these lads, because they are like George Garton and Phil Salt. I know he keeps wicket for us, but they are incredible. Some of the catches they take in games and in practice, they're, George would be up there as one of the best fielders I've ever seen, and probably in the world, actually. Like, he's unbelievable. He's so athletic, and some of the catches and stops that he can make is incredible. So, yeah, I know. I think just in general, all sports, I think whether you end up being a club cricketer, playing in school, or you end up making it through to being a professional cricketer, playing a multi amount of sports can only help make you as good a athlete, as good a hand-eye coordination. You know, there's so much around mental health now and well-being. We all know how good sport is for young people, and or any age, really, no matter what age you are, how good it is for your development as a youngster, and then going through your adult life, your mental health, well-being, as I say, I think it's just, I would actively encourage everyone to try and play as much sport and be as active as they can. I think that's massively come out. I know it's getting a bit deep, but the pandemic and everything like that, you just see how people have coped. Sport has been so important to people, and fitness and health, that I mean, I actively encourage everyone to do as much as they can, really.
100% Will. And I know that you said there it is a little bit profound, but it is 100% true, isn't it? The fact is, sport really does have such a profound effect on our mental and, of course, physical health as well. It makes you fitter, it makes you healthier, less prone to cardiovascular disease, this, that, the other. And, of course, mental health as well is massive.
All my best friends are through sport as well in my life. All my best mates are through cricket, really. And it's that kind of camaraderie. And cricket is such a good game for making friends and having relationships with people that, you know, I think I actually dread to think what I'd be doing with my life or where I'd be if it wasn't for cricket, because I've got so many great memories and so many great friends in the game that I just don't really know where I'd be to. It's a strange concept to think where I'd be without what I'd be doing without cricket, because it's such a great game, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Absolutely, it is, Will. I mean, I should know. I talk about it for a living, fortunately, but it is weird. And again, we don't want to get that profound and, you know, think about alternate realities. But yeah, it would be strange, wouldn't it? Not knowing the people that you know through the game, not knowing the game itself. Imagine if cricket didn't exist. I mean, before we get too, you know, profound and deep on the podcast, we'll change up the subject. But talking of the game itself, Will, and you mentioned beforehand earlier, Chris Nash, who is, of course, a legend of county cricket, in particular down in Sussex. But in terms of those formative years, who were your cricketing idols? Who were your role models in the game? Who did you try and shape your game and mould your game off of in those early years?
I think the Ashes 2005 was massive. I think massive for cricket in England in general. And obviously to have Warne over here as a leg spinner, I think Warne is my cricketing idol. He's the most perfect leg spinner that has ever been played the game in everyone's eyes. That's what every leg spinner aspires to be, really, is Shane Warne. You ask Rashid Khan, you ask Archie Lennon, you ask me, probably Jake Lintott, wrist spinners. Shane Warne is the one that everyone looked up to, and he kind of changed the whole mentality around spin bowling in general, really, but wrist spin in particular. So Warne is obviously up there, and I think the 2005 Ashes winning side, you know, they just changed the perspective and the momentum in England around cricket. The whole media journey that happened that year, cricket went from being like a bit of a forgotten about sport, really, to the whole country getting behind, and suddenly cricket became, in inverted commas, cool again to a degree. You know, especially with Flintoff stumbling around, getting off the bus with his eyes staring in opposite directions, you know, people became kind of, they could familiarise with that. And, you know, they see just a normal bloke who happens to be good at cricket. And I don't mean that in any kind of disrespectful way, but I don't think you necessarily get that from such sports as football. You know, I think that's why Rooney's probably a bit of a cult hero, because the every like day bloke down the pub who's watching this football can see a bit of Rooney in there when Rooney's getting beaten up boxing in his kitchen after a game. You can relate to him a bit, and I think, you know, the Ashes winning team, you could relate to them in a way, because they just seem to play their cricket in such a fashion to take down Australia, be one of the first team in X amount of years to beat the Aussies. And, you know, it was such a big year for cricket. So I think obviously Warne would be my, as an actual cricketer, the cricketing hero. But then I think the Ashes winning side just changed everyone's mentality, in particular mine, towards cricket. And actually was a very inspirational time to be a cricket fan and cricket lover.
100%, Will. It was. And again, that is one of my, not regrets, because of course I can't really change, you know, the timeline. I was born in 2001. But I would have loved to experience that Ashes summer. And I suppose for you, Will, because we brought it up, what was your favourite memory of that iconic series? There's so many different moments to choose from, so many memorable games. Of course, we think about Edgbaston, that two-run victory against the Aussies. But what do you say was your go-to moment from the 2005 Ashes?
It was. I distinctly remember being at Horsham Cricket Club in the bar watching the last 50 runs of that Edgbaston game. I'm trying to think how old would I have been? I would have been probably about 16 that summer. So I think I had a game for Horsham, and Dad had taken me in the car. I might have been playing for Horsham first team, and there was a game at Horsham, and Dad had driven me down. We were listening on the radio to we'd watched the first bit at home because it was obviously on Channel 4, we didn't have Sky, so we watched it on Channel 4, jumped in the car, listened to it on the radio, and then got to cricket a little bit early, and everyone was just sat in the bar watching. No one warmed up. The game must have got delayed, because I remember watching the Geraint Jones take the catch and then quickly going out to warm up and then ended up playing. I can't tell you what happened in the game or anything like that, but I just remember everyone just in complete silence, just watching this game, chewing their fingernails. Like, no one had a fingernail left by the end. And it was just such a dramatic period of play that hour or two that morning. And it looked like the Aussies were going to get over the line, and then obviously England managed to win, which probably, I think they've said, wasn't actually out, was it? Because his hand was off the bat or whatever it should, but I mean, it was out, wasn't it? As an English fan, it was out, come on. But yeah, that would have to be the one memory that sticks out from that series.
Yeah, it's a very, very common one. And it is, I would argue, the most iconic moment. I mean, another one which has actually popped up quite a few times, actually, is McGrath getting Truscothic at Lords, you know, for his 500th test wicket.
Okay, but yeah.
For me, Edgbaston, of course, as a Warwickshire native as well, it's an iconic test, an iconic series. And it's a special moment in English cricket. That entire summer really did
kickstart. You could reel off so many, couldn't you? Like Peterson hitting McGrath into the pavilion at Lords. Mm-hmm. I remember his innings at the Oval when Warne dropped him at slip. Warne had caught everything at first slip for the Aussies and then put his mate down, and KP went on and got that massive score. But you know, there's so many. I think it's probably the best series. I can't remember a series that for an England fan to be involved in that kind of ebbed and flowed, and the momentum, and that was amazing.
It was. It really is one of history's greatest ever test series.
Still got the DVD.
Have you?
Still got the DVD somewhere.
Again, a classic here in England and Wales. Everyone knows someone with that DVD. It's an absolute classic, isn't it? It's a timeless relic.
No DVD player anymore. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Netflix or Amazon Prime. We'll have to get it on there, won't we? The complete 2005 Ashes. But
it can be a big push on Twitter for winter to get the get it onto Amazon Prime or Netflix or one of the other various TV companies.
Yeah, so if you see that on our Twitter, listeners, you know why. It's because of this conversation we're having right now with Will Beer. But
likes, please.
As many as possible, because it needs to happen. It's a fantastic, fantastic DVD. But again, with those series, I suppose in England and Wales, Will, you did mention Shane Warne, but let's be honest here, in this country, we're not really known as much for spin bowling. We're known for seam bowling, aren't we? The likes of Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad. You think more recently as well, the likes of Jofra Archer, Chris Wokes, Mark Wood. We could list off so, so many great seamers here in this country. But why did you become a spin bowler? I know you mentioned there about your idol Shane Warne, 708 test wickets. Pretty much explains it all, doesn't it, in terms of why he was your idol. But what was it about the art of spin bowling which drew you in the first place? Why isn't Will Beer a specialist batsman or a wicketkeeper or a seam bowler?
I just fell into it, really. I used to run up and when I was 7 or 8 and just bowl little leg cutters without even meaning to. One day, again, down at Horsham Cricket Club, someone was walking around the boundary and I think I was bowling a few balls to mum or something, or bowling them and mum was throwing them back or something. And someone said, you know, he's bowling leg cutters there. Mum was like, what's a leg cutter? No, bless her, she wouldn't have a clue. And it just got highlighted that I was bowling little leg cutters. I'm sure Dad was probably aware of it as well. And it just went from there that I just naturally rolled my wrist over that way on the ball. And I just tried bowling a bit of leg spin and it just happened, really. It was just pretty natural, and I can remember being 9-10 years old and I was a leg spinner, but it just happened. I just became a leg spinner. It wasn't something that I thought about, or I was a seamer to start with and decided that I was going to one day at school try my hand at bowling leg spin and you're actually not bad at that. It was just something that I naturally did, bowled little leg cutters, got tiny little hands, even to this day got really small hands, so I couldn't really get my hand around the ball properly. So I think that's why I only bowled little leg cutters, and actually, roguely enough, learned to spin the ball off my index finger. So most, very uncommon. So lots of leg spinners obviously spin it off their third finger, but because I've got such small hands, especially when I was younger, I just used to roll my hand down the side of the ball with my index finger and learned to bowl leg spin. And so I get all my little cuts and calluses on my index finger. Very strange, but so there you go. Yeah,
that is very strange. I can't say that we've heard that on the podcast before. We have actually heard about naturally bowling leg cutters and off cutters, actually. And that's where seamers have developed into becoming spin bowlers. But spinning it with the index, that's more to do with off spin. Your middle and index.
Honestly, I had such little hands that I couldn't even get my third finger round the ball. So my wrist is naturally doing that like a leg spinner, a leg cutter. But the only way I could get any revolutions on the ball was to impart by flicking down the side of it. So I've just learned to, I get a tiny little bit off my third finger, but not much. Not much at all. I was lucky to do, through the ECB, I got put on some of the skill set-y kind of things years ago. And Shane Warne's coach, Terry Jenner, I managed to get to know TJ really well in my younger years. I actually went out to Australia for 2 weeks through the Brian Johnson program with Adil Rashid. The pair of us went out to Adelaide to do some work with TJ, and he couldn't believe it. He'd never seen anything like it. He'd obviously worked with some of the best leg spinner, and then he had the likes of Dilly and a few others in Australia that he'd done work with, and he just couldn't get his head around the fact that I'd spun it off my index finger. But yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's confused me as well, I'm going to be honest, Will. Again, that's something more common which be associated with me and my off spin, not with leg spin. As you mentioned, it's more the ring finger with the middle finger, but that's really interesting. That's something I've learned from today's podcast. And in terms of your leg spin itself, Will, what's your favourite delivery to bowl? Because obviously that's a very, very unique way of generating leg spin. But what is your favourite variation as a leg spinner to bowl in cricket?
I don't know about favourite variation, but I know, I bowl a googly and a slider, obviously a leg spinner. I wouldn't say I necessarily have a favourite. It's just, I think you're just trying to always work on your little box of tricks and try and improve your variations, trying to make them as hard to read as you can. Changes of pace, changes of using the crease as much as you can. Speaking with Rashid Khan, he talks about having multiple leg spinners and grips for leg spinners and googlies, and it's so interesting listening to him and how he goes about his stuff. And he's the complete opposite to what I am as a leg spinner. I guess I've kind of been brought up trying to be the perfect Shane Warne-esque model and then develop my own kind of way, whereas he's just a maverick off the streets of Afghanistan, just finding ways to play tape ball and be better than his brothers. And, it's an incredible to listen to how he played around with his grips and worked out how to spin the ball and various ways that he goes about it. But, that's the art. That's why we love cricket so much. There's so many different ways of going about it. You can be Jimmy Anderson or Lasith Malinga. You can be Shane Warne, Mushtaq Ahmed. There's Muralitharan, Tufnell. There's so many different ways of going about bowling finger spin and leg spin and everything. It makes it such a great game. There's not a one size fits all kind of approach. So that's why we love it, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. There's not uniformity in cricket in comparison to other sports, is there? Everyone puts their own little flavour on the art form. And you mentioned Rashid Khan, Will. I'm guessing you've seen this masterclass on YouTube. I think it was from Fox Sports. With Rashid Khan and Shane Warne at the MCG. What a video that is.
I mean, the best test leg spinner and probably the best T20 leg spinner, just there chatting about how they go about it. And, they're both at completely opposite ends of the spectrum, but there's some fundamentals there that are the same for both. Both got good, strong actions, aligned to the target well and all that kind of stuff if we're going in our coaching manual. And then it's just the maverick that is both of them, I guess, but Warne in his own is a bit more technically perfect out the MCC coaching manual. How you'd want to, if you picture a leg spinner, you probably picture Shane Warne. But I mean, Rashid is an absolute genius in his own right. And it's nice to see that there's so many different ways that you can go about being the best in the world. And those two are probably the two, aren't they? With Warne being so high on the list for test cricket, and then the way Rashid Khan's come into the game from a pretty unknown quantity being Afghanistan. And who would have thought 10 years ago that Afghanistan would have such a place in world cricket, and the world's best T20 bowler would come out of Afghanistan. I think people would have laughed at you 10 years ago. So no, it's amazing.
It is. It's an incredible journey. And again, that video is absolutely brilliant. I cannot recommend that enough. For any young spinners, I absolutely loved it as a cricket badger, even though I'm not, you know, necessarily a leg spin. I can barely bowl off spin down at my local club, but it's such a fantastic video. And Rashid Khan, again, you mentioned it already, Will, really is an inspiration, isn't he? He's a trailblazer. He's a lovely fella, both on and off the pitch. Knows the art form so well as well for someone so young. Because when you look at leg spinners, I always say that they usually tend to mature around the age of 27 or 28. We've seen it with the likes of Warne himself. We've seen it with the likes of Adil Rashid, Adam Zampa. You usually mature and peak and, you know, go to the peak of your powers at the age of 27 or 28, even 29 as well. But Rashid Khan is in his early 20s and he's already mastered leg spin. It's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, we think he's mastered it, but if anything, if you're saying he's going to peak at 27, 28, 29, you know, how good's he going to be in 3-4 years or, but I mean, yeah, he's phenomenal. And I think you see players come on the scene and take it by storm to start with. I'm thinking someone like Mendes, let's say, as a spinner who came on for Sri Lanka and, you know, took the world by storm, bowling his little flickers and spinning it both ways. And then kind of got found out a little bit and people worked out and started to pick him a bit better and he didn't quite have the same impact. Where it seems like Rash has been exposed to all the different competitions around the world, all the analysts have seen him, all of world cricket have faced him and know about him, but he's still as good as he was when he first arrived, if not better. So I think that just shows you how good he really is, because there's been many a player that's come on and had one good season, two good seasons, get found out a bit and then lose their impact a little bit. But he just seems to be getting better and better. And, you know, as you say, he could be peaking at 27, 28, 29. And, you know, years down the line, I mean, let's hope Afghanistan get their or keep their test status and everything with what's going in the women's game and everything over there. Let's hope, because I understand it's a bit messy with regards to what's happening with Afghanistan cricket at the moment, and obviously Afghanistan in general as a place. But I mean, it's such a talented nation for players like Nabi and Rash to come out of. We want to, as cricket fans, we want to see these guys playing and we want to see them competing. And, you know, they could be a good test nation in 5-10 years. There's nothing to say they can't, because who would have said they would have produced ODI and T20 cricketers 10 years ago. So, you know, there's so much potential there. And if Rash hasn't reached his peak, then why can't he be the talisman to take them into test cricket and be really competitive in that format of the game as well?
Isn't that an absolutely terrifying thought? But for opposition batsmen around the world, Rashid Khan hasn't reached his peak. I mean,
What I mean. You actually don't know. Like, he might have done, but at the same time, he might not have. And he'd be learning every day. He'll be striving to get better, more experience and more exposure to different conditions around the world. There's no reason to say he couldn't be getting better, which is pretty frightening, to be honest, because I watch him bowl and he's bloody amazing at the moment. So it's amazing to think that his ceiling could be even higher, but why couldn't it be?
Exactly. Who knows? Who knows, Will? Only the future will tell, of course. We don't have the crystal ball. We can't tell the future. But I'll tell you what, if Rashid Khan continues to improve over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, my goodness.
Well, he's improving as a batter, that is for sure, after his innings at Durham the other day and getting us over the line. So maybe he'll turn. Maybe his improvement is with his batting and he'll turn himself into a genuine all-rounder, which is if his batting becomes anywhere near as good as his bowling, that is a cricketer right there.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, with his very unorthodox camel bat as well, with the two middles, which again we had a discussion about before the pod, didn't we, Will? But
yeah, George Garton's funnily enough got one as well, and I mean he's sponsored by Keeley and they make good bats anyway. George always seems to get great bats. He's got the best bats in the change room. I don't know what he must go down there and like take them bottles of whiskey and golf balls. I know they like their whiskey and the golf balls, the Keeleys, so maybe George is hot on looking after them. But he's got a camel as well, and yeah, I've had a little tap with it with a ball, and they are nice. They wouldn't be my choice taking out the middle of the cricket bat and putting it the places where you don't necessarily want to hit the ball. But I mean, if it means you hit the ball like Rashid did the other day, then we should probably all get one.
Yeah, especially for us as tail enders. I mean, I can definitely, you know, relate to the need for a camel bat, because if you look at my bat, there are no cherries in the middle. It's all off the edges. It's all at the toe. So who knows?
Maybe there's a gap in the market there.
Yeah, a niche for tenable cricketers.
They're going to make themselves millions for the average bat, the cricket bat for the average batsman.
I wouldn't call myself average. I think that's insulting to actually average batsman. I'd say proper mediocre. That would be my my range for batting, 11.5 average, but a lot of those coming off the edges. Let's just say there haven't been many cover drives.
You need a wider camel then.
I need one with the humps on the side, you know, extra surface on the edges. Get them racing down to third man more often. That'd help me and probably get that average to around about 20. So who knows? Bear Cricket, our sponsor, of course, if you're listening, guys. But yeah, my terrible batting skills aside, Will, of course, here at the County Cricket Podcast, we do usually focus on the thing that we're named after, which is, of course, county cricket. And we haven't really spoken enough about it so far just yet, of course. I've been very interested to know about your journey and, of course, spin bowling as an art form. But in terms of your journey in county cricket, Will, what were your first impressions of Sussex as a cricket club? What can you remember about your first days with the Martlets?
I've been lucky enough to be involved with Sussex since I was under 10. I played Sussex under 10s all the way through the age groups. Got on the academy when I was 14, 15, which was great. You know, I got so much specific coaching and, I mean, the academy system back then was great. There were 10 of us with all the funding that went into it and the support we got of psychology, cricket in general, strength and conditioning. You know, it was kind of unheard of for cricketers our age to get the same treatment as the professional staff were getting. So, I mean, got such a great footing into the game and a great base to build from. So, you know, I came through the academy, played quite a bit of second team cricket from the age of 16. Lucky enough, my parents put me in private school, went to school in Reigate, but I left there to go to sixth form college in Horsham so I could have more time to play cricket, really, because I wasn't going to get enough time off school to play cricket if I stayed at Reigate. So I basically left Reigate, went to a college in Horsham, Colliers, so I could play more second team cricket, really. So I played 2 years of second team cricket pretty much all the summer. My studies took a bit of a backward step, Mum was a bit gutted about. You know, I had a place at Loughborough to study there and to play cricket if I wanted, but you know, I got offered the contract when I left school and it was just something I couldn't turn down. And yeah, no, that was my first step onto the ladder, I suppose, through the academy, and got offered my first contract at end of being 18, just turned 19. It was great. Everything that I ever wanted. I from the age of 12, I aspired to be a professional cricketer, and it's all I wanted to do was play cricket. So to have the opportunity, you know, I was delighted, and it's kind of like, right here, the hard work starts now.
Exactly, Will. And I tell you what, it's always nice here on the podcast when you listen about people joining their boyhood clubs, the boyhood counties. So this was your dream. And of course, it's a massive bonus to play for Sussex. You played all your club cricket there in the county. You've come up through the ranks of the academy as well. And then you get to play for Sussex County Cricket Club, one of the 18 first-class counties here in England and Wales. It's an immensely proud moment, isn't it? And in terms of your first 11 debut, Will, what can you remember from that moment? How proud of an occasion was that for you to wear that Martlets badge and represent Sussex County Cricket Club?
Yeah, it was amazing. I made my first-class debut at Lords in the county champion game, which obviously now, or in previous years, has been in UAE, in Dubai or Abu Dhabi. But it always used to be at Lords. So the MCC 11, which was pretty much England Lions or players on the fringes of playing for England, played the champion county, and we won the championship in 2008. And I made my, or was it 2007? Must have been 2007.
Six and seven, the double.
Yeah. And I made my first class debut in 2008 in the first game of the year. I mean, they weren't overly good conditions to bowl leg spin. I mean, I think I only bowled maybe 5-6 overs in the game, but I mean, what a dream to first class debut at Lords. It was incredible. I remember Steve Kirby bowling at me and absolutely abusing me from fine leg when he wasn't bowling. Yeah, he was shouting at the top of his northern accent that he was going to hit me in the head and he couldn't wait to bowl at me and all this kind of stuff. And I was thinking, oh my God, I didn't sign up for this Cabs. But no, yeah, it's great. Amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better place to make my debut, really.
Well, exactly. It's the home of cricket. Not a bad place at all. And as you said, in the Champion County match, again, it's quite a unique debut, actually. I can't say that anyone else on the podcast has actually made their debut in that match. We've usually had ones, you know, in pre-season games, like, you know, the MCCU ones, the ones against Cardiff, the ones against Leeds and Bradford, for example. But I don't think we've ever had someone who debuted in a Champion County game. So, Will.
I think Mushy must have been in Pakistan still, or had only just got over and wasn't fit, or there was obviously a space to play a spinner. And I think Ollie Rayner would have been on the staff at the same time. Tom Smith, who's now at Gloucester, would have been on the staff at the same time. And for whatever reason, Chris Adams was captain and just gave me the nod and wanted to have a look at me, I guess. It was just a bit of a freebie. They knew that Mushy was going to play. We'd won the championship the 2 years prior and then we were going for trying to do the treble, and it was just a bit of a free game. And, you know, luckily enough, I think we must have played a couple of pre-season games or been to Dubai or something on pre-season, if I remember rightly. I bowled reasonably well, probably, and, you know, got thrown in the deep end a little bit, and, you know, it was amazing.
And the rest is history. As they say, 13 years later.
I think this is my 14th season in the game, I think.
13 years, 14 seasons.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, just to, you know, get rid of any confusion there. Apologies, listeners. Yeah, yeah. That's how I always do it. I know that isn't the correct way to do it. But in terms of that game, Will, do you remember your first ever first-class wicket? Do you remember who you dismissed in that game?
Aaron Haranath. Caught Pryor from memory. Was it caught Pryor? Was Pryor keeping? I think it was definitely nicked off. I mean, it was a non-turning leg break that Aaron Haranath nicked, and I'm pretty sure it was Pryor who caught it. It was in the Championship County game at the time. It would be an 11 of pretty much the England Lions, and then there would be an MCC university player that would play every year. So one player from the MCCU's university side would always play, and Aaron Haranath was the one for that year. And then he obviously went on and I played against Aaron loads anyway, because we're similar age group. I think he's a year older than me, but I played plenty of age group cricket against him. So I knew who Aaron was, and, you know, he went on and played for Surrey for 10, 12 years or whatever he did, had a career with them. So, you know, he was no mug by any stretch, but yeah, Aaron Haranath nicked off. Can't remember exactly if it was caught slip or caught keeper, or seems so long ago, but it was definitely a non-turning leggy. I tried to spin it sideways and it just glided on a green April wicket at Lords.
Fair enough though, Will. At least remember it. Fair play. Fair play. Good recall, that. First ever first-class wicket, and of course a momentous occasion for any first-class bowler. It really is. But in terms of that day, okay, Champion County, at the home of cricket, you're making your debut for Sussex. Would you say that is the proudest moment in your cricketing career to date? Or would you say something else tops that? I can think of one moment, potentially in 2009, with the T20 Blast. Would that top that moment? Or was that debut for you the pinnacle of your time at Sussex so far?
I wouldn't say pinnacle, no. I think, as I kind of mentioned, it was kind of like a freebie game. So I don't know if I necessarily had earned it, if you know what I mean. It hadn't been like I was almost playing because Mushy wasn't playing, and it was a free game, and it was obviously great. Like, don't get me wrong, amazing place to make a debut and to have a game and everything. But I didn't play another championship game that year, or if I did, it was only one. It wasn't like I'd earned the right to be in the first team and everything like that. So, England under 19. Debut, that will always stick with me. The debut at Lords will stick with me. As you say, 2009, that year in general, not just T20 Blast, because we won the Pro 40, we won the T20, and we lost the final at Lords in the 50 over comp. So we nearly did the treble. We went to the Champions League. So I think 2009 in general would probably be up there. But no, so many amazing memories. I think you actually take for granted how good and how lucky you've been to play on on the big stage, and you know, play, as you say, you even you talking about like what an amazing thing for me to play for my boyhood club and play for 14 seasons, and you almost forget how special that is. You forget cap 682, I think I am, the small number of players that have played for Sussex, and actually from 12 years old growing up wanting to be a professional cricketer, wanting to play for Sussex, to actually achieve that. I think whether you play one game or you play 300 games, to be able to achieve that is obviously something incredibly special. And, you know, it's amazing even hearing you say that. I guess it brings it all back, and why you play cricket, the reason you started, the love of the game, not just for the accolades and to pay your mortgage as it is now, so to speak. It's actually you play cricket for those childhood dreams and memories, and you know, to actually think about it like that is pretty cool, really.
It's incredibly cool. It's incredibly special as well. The fact is, as you've said, you've lived the dream, which, let's face it, around 700 cricketers have done for Sussex County Cricket Club ever since its inception. It's an incredible achievement. It really is. It's absolutely massive. And again, with cricket,
don't get me wrong, I always aspired to go and play for England, and I still do to this day. Would love to play for England, you know, and I'd probably miss the chance. And realistically, it's not going to happen for me. But you know, I think to have that ambition to go and play for England and to play for Sussex, to be able to achieve at least one of those things, as you say, it is incredibly special and something you probably only really become aware of and proud of when you finish and look back, because you're kind of in the cricket bubble in the moment. You're kind of just going day by day. It's just become habitual, almost, the day-to-day life that goes with cricket and what happens. So actually, I think it'd be, when you finish, when you look back, actually, how proud you'll be and how amazing it was that you managed to do that. So yeah, no, it's been pretty cool so far.
Well, that's excellent here, Will. It really is. And you should be incredibly proud. You really should, because when you deep dive into the stats, the average county career usually only lasts about 2 to 3 years, if that. I mean, we have a lot of one-year contracts, actually, in the county circuit. So for you to be entering your 14th year, still bowling excellently, leading Sussex's all-time T20 wicket-taking charts as well. I mean, Will, you should be incredibly proud of your achievements. And you said it so nicely beforehand, whether you play one game or 100, that's something that you can never have taken away from you. You've got cap, exactly. You've represented your county. And it is incredibly special. And look, if you do represent England, even if you don't, the fact is you've lived the dream, which thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people would have wanted to live. So either way, it's an incredible achievement.
Yeah, no, definitely. And to be like, I'm actually out of contract at the moment. And like, there's been so much going on at Sussex with Salt and Jordan leaving. And, you know, they're obviously such big players. And, you know, we're in four-day cricket, we're backing our youngsters and trying to develop there. I haven't actually signed a new contract with Sussex yet. So, you know, going into the weekend, there's a chance. I don't quite know what's going to be happening. I'm hopeful that I'm going to sign a new contract, or, you know, even if I didn't sign a contract at Sussex, I might be able to have an opportunity somewhere else. But there's a chance that this weekend might be the last time that, you know, like, I hope it's not, but it might be the last time that I play even professional cricket. So, you know, it puts into perspective how amazing this weekend is and how excited I am, because, you know, even if I do get another contract, I might not ever play another finals day, might not be lucky enough to. So actually to be able to go and have the opportunity to be at another finals day, to play for Sussex again, all those things that you kind of take for granted, I think you actually look back and you think, of course, it is pretty amazing. And, you know, haven't mentioned, but we've got a newborn in the house. We've got a 3.5-week-old daughter in the house, and that puts another perspective on life. It can instantly changes your view and outlook on the world. So actually to know that I'm going off to Edgbaston on Saturday to play, as you say, for Sussex, my boyhood club, currently out of contract and not really knowing what's going on. And, you know, I think as a team, you know, Salt leaving, Jordan leaving, we don't know what's happening with a few other overseas players necessarily, and other players. It's kind of our last dance, almost our last opportunity to play as this T20 side before a few people move on. So I think we're all, as a squad, going back to Sussex and and county cricket. Just really excited for this weekend and to try to have one last go at putting a few wrongs right, really, because we've got through, this is our fourth year where we've got to a quarter final, our second in 4 years being at finals day. And you know, people have spoken about us being one of the better sides in T20 or having the best bowling attack or whatever it might be, but you don't have the best bowling attack until you win the competition. You're not the best side until you lift the trophy. So I think, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about us as a side, but actually it's down to us now to try and put in a performance and that we can be proud of on Saturday, whether that is win, lose, draw. Actually, you know, give it our all, play, be calm, composed out on the pitch and prepare well and just give it everything. And, you know, hopefully we come out on the right side on Saturday.
100% will. And funnily enough, we mentioned this in our T20 Blast Finals Day preview show, of course. Listeners, you can go and find that on the website. But as you mentioned right there, we did liken it to The Last Dance, because when you think of this Sussex team, and I liken this all the way back to 2018, I'm talking about, so 2018, 2019, 2020, and of course 2021, there really has been a slew of ridiculously talented cricketers in the T20 format down in Hove. The likes of Tim Mills, for example, Chris Jordan, Phil Salt, Laurie Evans, Danny Briggs, yourself, Will, who again is right at the top. That must be incredibly, you know, special. 106 wickets. Tim Mills is in second on 78. It's a massive gap that you've created up at the top. But there really has been this incredible amount of talent, but there just hasn't been a trophy. And to be honest, I hope for Sussex as a club, I hope for the fan base, and of course for yourselves as players, that you do give yourselves a good chance on Saturday to put that right. Because to be honest, Sussex have deserved it, in my opinion, over the last few years. And of course, for you personally, Will, I sincerely hope this isn't the last we see of you in county cricket. Because I'll tell you a little personal story here. My first ever season was 2009. So that's when I first went to a cricket game at Edgbaston, 2009 CB40, Division 2, I believe, we were in back then. That says a lot about how good Warwickshire have come since then. But rain-affected game in Glamorgan, and that's my first ever season. And from then on, I've loved county cricket ever since. Right, and 2009 finals day, I'll never, first of all, forget your haircut, because it was quintessentially 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was modelled on Luke Wright's, to be honest. I think Wrightsy had a similar bleached blonde, Rory Hamilton Brown. We're all going for the same kind of look.
Exactly. Yeah, it was just the style of the time. But the actual moment I remember from that finals day was your wicket of Craig Keyswetter. And I think it was Andy Hodd behind the stumps, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And the stumping. And it was just the wild celebrations, because that was when the game started to turn in Sussex's favour. So just on my behalf, Will, and I imagine on plenty of Sussex fans and county cricket fans in general, to be honest, mate, we hope that you do get a new contract. We really, really do. We don't want to see you out of the county circuit, especially after the year we've had with the likes of Tender Shikata leaving, the likes of Ricky Clark as well, Daryl Mitchell. Yeah, we don't want to see you leaving anytime soon, mate. That's all I'll say.
Oh, no, I mean, I feel as good a player as I have been in all formats, really. You know, I feel like I've got a lot still to give, and I think probably haven't quite done myself justice in Red Bull cricket and circumstance. I haven't played the amount of Red Bull cricket as I would have wanted in my career. But as you say, like, I mean, I'm incredibly proud of my career and to have 14 years and be leading wicket taker in T20. But I feel as good a player as I ever have been in all formats. I feel as fit as I have been. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily worrying about it, but as I say, having a newborn at home puts life into perspective. And, you know, I'm absolutely loving my cricket still. So, yeah, hopefully finals day can go well for Sussex and a good win. And, you know, what will be with the contract. But, you know, I've just loved every moment of it. I want to just enjoy putting on the shirt and performing. And, you know, what will be. But, yeah, as you say, we do feel as a side that we haven't quite achieved what we should have. We feel like we've got enough talent in the room, in the squad, to have won a trophy in the last, I mean, even longer than 4 years, really. I think you look back to our championship team a few years ago, and you got Ed Joyce, Nashy, Yards, you know, Steve McGoffin, those kind of guys. Like, we had a really, really, really good Red Bull side as well. And we didn't win a trophy there. We came third a few years in the championship, and getting a bit more recent times with our T20 side, you know, Luke Wright at the helm, what player he was, 100 caps for England, and you know, he's been amazing for club and country, I guess. And I guess he gets forgotten about a little bit now with all the, like, the salts and the youngsters coming through. But I mean, he's 36 and as good as ever, righty. I mean, he's not looking like stopping anytime soon. I think he's got 2 years left on his contract, and you know, he's still smacking it everywhere. Hopefully we can all just put our best foot forward and put in a couple of performances that we know that we're capable of. And you know, it's four good teams at finals day, you know, with that in their own right. Kent are a really good side as well, and the other semi-finals are pretty good game as well. I mean, we'll be getting to the ground early to see what the wicket's like, and you know, I'll be intrigued to see how that first game pans out as well, because I think Hampshire are obviously taking the momentum of their incredible win at Notts. I mean, I watched all the quarterfinals. We were the first one, so it was nice to be able to put your feet up and watch the other three, knowing that we were already through. But I mean, both of them are going to be incredibly tight games, I'd imagine. And I don't know what the bookies are saying in terms of in favourites for finals day, but there can't be much between the teams. I think it's going to be a good day and a pretty even contest. And whoever handles the occasion probably the best out of the four teams and can hold their nerve is probably going to be the one that lifts the trophy.
Absolutely, yeah, Will. That is spot on, isn't it? It's not necessarily about the best on paper on days like finals day, is it, for example? I mean, I think back to 2014, we were so lucky as a team, Warwick, to get through to that in the first place. And then we actually went on to win the thing. So, again, yeah, who knows? Amazing.
You steal the momentum of your quarterfinal, which, you know, arguably Hampshire did, arguably we did with Rashid Khan there. There was a time when we looked like we weren't going through. You know, it's the team that peaks at the right time. It's such a shame that the schedule has meant that the group stage ended and we waited so long for the quarterfinals, and then we've waited so long for finals day. Obviously, the 100 was in between the groups and the quarters, which meant that a few of the lads were obviously playing and keeping their hand in, but it does feel weird how the gap in between group stage to finals day. It'd be nice if it could be condensed a little bit from a player's point of view, and I guess a fan's point of view as well, because you kind of lose track of where the competition's at. It kind of disappears and comes back again, disappears, come back again. But I mean, county cricket is so much cricket. I wouldn't want to be the in charge of the scheduling for county cricket, but it's not easy, but.
No, it's not. It's not easy, but in 2022, finals day is early. I believe it's the 16th of July at Fortress Edgbaston, of course, the spiritual home of the T20 Blast. So I think the scheduling next year should be better.
It does make sense. And it's also, I mean, you can't guarantee the English weather, can you? But you only have to look back at last year, how finals day was interrupted. I know there was no crowd and it probably didn't have as big an impact with it being the rain affected day. But can you imagine if finals day was rained off in September, all the people that the effort that goes to it, or it was three bowl outs or something stupid like that? It would be a travesty, wouldn't it? So actually to have it in the middle of the summer, you know, when the kids are off school or whatever it is, seems to make so much more sense to me. But there we go.
Glad it does.
It's above my pay grade, that.
True. But it does to us as fans, I think, as well, you know, to have a more condensed tournament, but you know, a bit more structured, a bit better laid out, to say the least, because as you said, there was such a massive gap between the group stage and the quarters. I still maintain that Warwickshire would have went through because we had the momentum, but it's one of those at the end of the day. But hey, yeah, it's going to be a fantastic day, a fantastic occasion. I cannot wait. I'm so excited, even though I'm going there as a neutral fan, obviously. But yeah, it should be great. I don't often get to see the South Group teams in, you know, live in the flesh. So yeah, it'll be something completely different for myself as a fan as well. And I know the fans of all four counties will be looking forward to that, licking their lips, shall we say, for Saturday the 18th of September. But, Will, before we go on to our concluding segment of today's podcast, which is, of course, teammates, a nice way to wrap up today's episode, I just wanted to ask one final question. And I know that you've said beforehand that you are out of contract for the future. I'm not going to say is uncertain, but potentially unclear, you know, at the time of recording, right?
Yeah.
But what are your future aspirations in the game heading into 2021 and beyond? Because finals day, of course, is massive. I think we know what the aspiration there is, to win the T20 Blast. Okay, I think we can already answer that question. But in terms of your cricketing career, I suppose, what's next for Will Beer?
I think that's a good question. I think obviously out of contract, I don't necessarily know where I'm going to be, but I hope I'll still be in the game. I hope I'll still be at Sussex. And, you know, I want to win as many games of cricket as I can. I want to win trophies. I think that's not that in my 20s, that wasn't the focus. But I think when you get towards, I mean, I'm only 32, turning 33 soon. So I'd like to hope I've still got a few years left in me. But when you come towards the back end and you maybe you turn into a bit more of a senior player and you mature a little bit, I think all you want to do is you live for those days where you win games, you win trophies. There's no better feeling as a sportsman with your 10 other mates or the rest of the lads, all the squad and coach and staff and your friends and family and everything that are rooting for you. There's no better feeling than winning games of cricket and winning trophies. So, I mean, hopefully finals day is the place where that starts again for Sussex. And, you know, I think Sussex have got such an exciting young crop of players coming through that hopefully the next few years is full of success as well. And we can start with a trophy this year and we can build on that and we can get back to winning games of cricket and ultimately winning trophies. I think as soon as you get to the point in your career where you're not trying to win games of cricket and you're not looking forward to winning trophies, you probably know you're at the end. And you hear people retiring saying that they started dreading training and they hated the training and they didn't enjoy the match days anymore. They were only playing because it was paying for the paycheck kind of thing. I think as soon as you hit that, then you realise that it probably is the end. But now, as I say, at the moment, I'm still absolutely loving my cricket, still trying to be the best player I possibly can, still aspiring to be as good as I can and yeah, win games of cricket, win trophies and be successful. Be a good senior player, help our young players, and I think all of that contributes to enjoying the game and trying to play as long as I can, really.
Absolutely, Will. And I think it goes without saying, but of course, we here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you nothing but the very best of luck, mate. Fingers crossed you can get that contract, and we see you back in 2022 with those unorthodox leg spinners, shall we say, with that little bit of index magic on it. But yes, Will, wishing you nothing but the very best of luck. And of course, with your fatherhood as well. I mean, congratulations. I should have said that earlier in the podcast, but again, a lovely thing outside of the game, of course,
exactly,
too.
I'm so glad you've got me on the podcast because I've managed to get an hour and a half to myself upstairs away from the carnage. My mum was around for a little bit. She just popped in to drop a few things off. So my wife and her were downstairs looking after our daughter, Ella. But yeah, I've just been able to have an hour and a half talking about the great game, and I can go back downstairs with a clear head and get back to daddy daycare probably for the rest of the afternoon.
Well, I'm glad we could help, Will, here at TCCP. But we're not done just yet, of course, Will, because I've alluded to it throughout today's podcast. And of course, it is a classic here at the County Cricket Podcast. And that is, of course, TCCP Teammates. So for the listeners out there who maybe don't know what Teammates is, basically in front of me, I've got an assortment of questions for Will to answer about the teammates that he shares a dressing room with down at the First Central County Ground in Hove. So Will Beer, are you ready for TCCP Teammates?
Not sure, but I guess I better say yes, hadn't I?
Well, yeah, there's no choice at this point. You're in too deep, to be honest, Will.
Let's do it.
Fantastic. Right then, Will. First question, kickstart with a classic here at TCCP. Who is the teacher's pet down in Hove? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, Haynes. Tom Haynes. He's currently captain of our four-day team, but... No, yeah, Haynes is always in the nets, probably for the right reasons, trying to improve and work on his game. And I think that, you know, you only have to look at the results and how many runs he scored this year. But, you know, it's obviously working for him. But no, yeah, Haynes, he can have it because he's nabbed the captaincy as well, hasn't he, for the time being.
That is true. But again, it has paid off. You've got to give Tom Haynes a lot of credit, the first member of the 1000 County Championship Runs Club.
No, he's played so well and he's got a bright future for sure. Only 22, another Horsham boy. He's doing really well, and hopefully a breakthrough season that he can then kick on with. And you never know, he might get on a little Lions trip or something this winter. And you know, wish him the best. Obviously, he's done really well this year.
100%, yeah. Lions tour is definitely on the cards for Tom Haynes. He's such a technically assured opener. I love watching him bat. He's been absolutely fantastic this summer for the Martlets. But moving on to our next question, then, Will. Okay, again, this has been on every single teammates episode, so glad to see that we have kept this classic in there. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails down in Hove? Who wouldn't you want to mess with, necessarily?
You know what? Tamal Mills is a lovely, lovely man, but I would not want to get on the wrong side of him. I reckon he could snap at you, and he's a big man. He's a strong man. He bowls 90 mile an hour. You don't want to get on the wrong side of Mills, because he's either gonna knock you into next week, or you're gonna find out you're netting the next day and you're facing Millsy, and he's gonna be coming for you. So I'm staying right on the right side of Mark Mills.
Yeah, definitely that choice.
By anyone who can bowl 90 mile an hour has got to be up there, isn't he?
Yeah. And especially Tamal, the man has got absolute tree trunks as arms, massive biceps, ridiculously well-built fella. But again, as you said, bowls 90 mile an hour, intimidating, great bowler in the T20 World Cup squad as well. So, yeah, wishing Tamal the very best of luck in that tournament alongside the rest of the England boys. But we're moving on to our third question then. First of all, musically themed one here at TCCP today. Who is the dressing room DJ down at the First Central County Ground? And what are their choices of tunes?
It's a good question. I think the music's gone out of the game a little bit, you know, and it's down to COVID, because we're in two changing rooms now. We're spread at Hove. You've got the away and the home changing rooms up where we obviously are in the corner, but because of COVID, the opposition are downstairs in the indoor school, and we're split into two changing rooms. Phil Salt likes his music. Phil Salt would like to probably take charge, and you know, he's an array of music. He likes his stuff from Manchester. He's a proud Manchester City fan. Unfortunately, as a Man United fan myself, we have a couple of disagreements there. But now Salty probably would like to take pride in claiming to be a DJ.
I think Phil has actually been quite a popular choice for that question, actually, from the rest of your Sussex teammates. Jamie Atkins said him, Jack Carson said him. So I'm just trying to think whether Meek said him. I think Stuart Meakin may have said him as well in one of our earlier podcasts. So, yeah, Phil Salt definitely. Yeah,
but music's definitely gone out of the game. There's not as much music in the change room, and it'd be only really in the gym people would take over and blast a few tunes now. Music's kind of gone out of the game because we're so separated. It's a shame, really. Hopefully COVID can disappear and we can get that back in our lives.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an important part of any dressing room culture, isn't it? The DJ, the tunes. Yeah, you've got to get yourself prepped and ready for a game. But talking of musically themed again, this is the second and final one, fortunately, Will. Who's the karaoke king down in Hove? And again, what is their go-to choice of song?
Karaoke king. Karaoke isn't really on the menu down in Hove that often, but Mitch Claydon likes, he's our like finds master, so to speak. He's obviously come from Kent, and you know, Mitch is a great guy, very funny, very extroverted, like does a bit. He's a trained magician, would you believe? He's got a few magic tricks up. He loves a drinking game. So he does throw a little karaoke game out during a few finds meetings. He put a few people on the spot. Tom Haynes again knows all the lyrics to like random songs by like Drake and stuff like that that you wouldn't associate a man from Horsham to know, but and a quiet opening batter, but he can blast out some of the most random songs and knows the most random lyrics to songs to raps to anything. So if you ever get Tom Haynes on the podcast, maybe you can get him to do a little song or a little something for you, because he's very good, actually.
I'll take that on board. Tom, if you're listening, of course, we'll have to, you know, see that for ourselves. I'll be interested for a little bit of Drake. I mean, I don't mind Drizzy, but yeah, fair enough. I'm going to be honest, I would not have expected that from Tom Haynes.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. You know, quiet opening batter, goes about his business, and then there you go. He's got a different side to him.
Fair play to him, though. Fair play. Each their own. Again, we always say that on the podcast. Like, very cliche term.
Ben Brown, who happens to be my best mate at Sussex, loves an 80s classic. So if there's ever going to be Ben Brown put up there, he loves a bit of Rod Stewart. He loves his 80s. So yeah, I think Brownie would probably pump out a Rod Stewart number, to be honest. So maybe Haynes and Brown would be one for the young, one for the old. We can have a little competition there.
Well, we've already had Brownie on the podcast, funnily enough. He did allude to his angelic voice, shall we say, with the 80s classics, but we didn't get to hear it firsthand. So again, Haynes and Brown, we'll have to get them on as a duet. Like some fusion.
You'd love to see it.
Some Drake Rod Stewart fusion. Yeah, we'd have to I'd make for an interesting podcast episode and for some interesting clips as well. But moving on from our musically themed ones, then, Will, moving on to question number 5. This is very much a cricket themed one. Who is the most likely to get timed out during a game? Who's very slow getting the kit on?
Timed out. That's a good question. But it's definitely not going to be Jack Carson. I played the lads played a 4-day game a while ago, start of the season, and Jack was a bit nervous around his batting. I think he'd had a couple of low scores, and I think we were only about 3 down, and Jack was batting 9, and he already had his whites on. He was that nervous. He'd already got his whites on. I think he'd got his pads lined up, thigh pads. I'm not sure about timed out. Probably one of the young lads. I'm going to say someone like Henry Crocombe. You know, they're always mucking around, always got football or playing indoor cricket. And, you know, I've got Henry Crocombe down as playing a bit of indoor cricket and not realising that we were 8 down and or 7 down and he's next in and having a mad scramble to get his kit on. But there we go. Definitely not Cass. Cass would be padded up way in advance.
Yeah, I'm definitely from the Jack Carson school as well. I remember in a village game this season, I think we'd lost 2 or 3 wickets. Again, I was batting at 10. And as soon as we lost the third one, pads on. But again, that's village cricket. Anything can happen. Yeah. I mean, the surface was acting up. It was an absolute green mamba of a pitch as well. I did end up batting as well and getting out for 4. So maybe it's a good idea that I did put the pads on nice and early. But I'll tell you another one, Will. I'm not sure if you've heard this or any of the listeners out there. Charlie Thurston literally does not have anything on. He has no pads on, no gloves, the helmet. He has nothing on until he is literally next out to bat.
Wow. That's remarkable.
It is.
I'm always thigh pads on when I'm 2 away. And in T20, 3 away. 3 away, always get ready early because things happen so quick. But, I mean, normally when you're 2 away, whites on, thigh pads, get your spikes on, have your pads close so you only need to whack them on. Gloves in your helmet. Choose which willow you're going to take out with you, nice and early. But no, there's nothing worse than being caught on the hop and being caught off guard and having to scramble your pads on, and that's awful. It's the worst feeling. It is the worst feeling.
It is. It's the recurring nightmare, isn't it? No matter what level of the game.
I've never had the dream, but Nashy always used to say that he'd have the dream where he'd wake up in the middle of the night and he'd be cold sweats, like he'd be so anxious, but it was he was walking down the stairs at Lord's and he couldn't find his bat. He could only find a teaspoon. And he'd be walking out to bat with a teaspoon, knowing that he was going to fail and not score any runs. And he'd be walking out and taking guard with a teaspoon and then he'd wake up. That was his cricket nightmare. So make of that what you will. But, yeah.
It's a very unique nightmare, I'm going to be honest. I mean, obviously, the forgetting the bat bit, fair enough, but at Lord's with a teaspoon. I'm not sure that's, you know, MCC qualified. I'm not sure you're allowed to go out to bat, make your mark with a silver teaspoon. But again, Nashy, hey, if he wants to come on the pod, we'll have to, you know, find the route behind that, because that is a very, very interesting story by the sounds of it, on face value, Will. But moving on to our next one. Again, this is a classic, and you will have to throw at least one person under the bus here, Will. Who are the best and worst dressed down in Hove?
I mean, Delray would tell you he's the best dressed, but he wears some incredible clothes. Like, he wore a hoodie with a pouch on it the other day. So, you know, a normal hoodie, you've got the bit where you can put your hands. He had a Velcro pouch where you can place things inside, and it's like a kangaroo.
That sounds genius.
It's either genius or incredibly bad. But yeah, I'm going to put Delray down as worst dressed for his hoodie with the pouch. Best dressed. That is a... Ollie Robinson likes to think that he's well-groomed and well-dressed. He's always got his hair in place, and you've probably seen him in the test matches. He's always got his hair nice and sharp and takes pride of place in making sure he's wearing nice clothes all the time. So I'm going to say Ollie Robinson likes to think that he's best dressed. I'm not saying he is, but likes to think that he is, and Dell can take their worst dress for me.
Interesting. I'm going to be honest. I don't mind Del Rey's garms. But again, that could just say something about me and my fashion sense as well. Take that as you will, listeners. But But no, I think Ollie Robb, that's a good shout. And again, looks very prim and proper, doesn't he, in terms of the haircut, the facial hair, designer stubble, this, that, the other. Fair enough. And what a bowler Ollie Robinson is. My goodness, what an absolute find he has been for the three lines and a crown. Brilliant, brilliant bowler.
Yeah, great lad. And obviously incredibly good bowler as well. I think he's going to have a long career with England, hopefully, if he can stay fit. I think he's proved that this summer, how good he is. And I hope he gets himself on that Ashes tour and has a good Ashes. And yeah, goes from strength to strength, really. Because we're going to miss him at Sussex. He's been amazing for us. He's led our attack for so many years now. He's going to be, it's a massive loss for Sussex, for England's game.
Well, it is, yeah. And I think back to 2020, Bobolish Trophy, came in for two games, took 14 wickets, finished as your second leading wicket taker behind Jack Carson on 17, which was absolutely ludicrous. But yeah, my amazing. Goodness, Ollie Robb, absolute gun seam bowler, to say the least. Moving on to our third from last question then, Will. A classic here, and I think I know who this might be, considering your description of this person earlier, but who's the dressing room joker down in Hove, who's always, pulling it's pranks, the extrovert?
I mean, Mitchell Playden has come in and there are pranks left, right and centre. There's kit going missing. There's stuff happening. You have to be on guard the whole time. But yeah, it's pretty simple. Mitchell Playden, we're going to miss him. He's obviously retiring, going back to Australia, and someone's got to take up the mantle. Tom Clark's a candidate, young Tom Clark. Another Horsham lad. He's mischievous and he's getting in on the act of nicking people's kit and mucking around. So I reckon Tom's a candidate to take over from Mitch, but they're big boots to fill.
Quite literally as well, with Mitch Claydon. He's a big fella, isn't he? Yeah. Fair enough. At least the future of the dressing room joker seems to be in safe hands then, with Tom Clark. Hopefully he can.
Or not hopefully, really, because he's probably going to pick on me, to be honest, if I'm still with us.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we, with regards to Tom Clark, whether or not he can fill those big boots left behind by Mitch Claydon. Moving on to our penultimate question then, Will. This is usually an interesting one, obviously, because in cricket, there does seem to be this intrinsic relationship, I think, between cricket and golf. It seems to be a lot of county cricketers love their golf. So the question here in front of me is, who's the best golfer down at Hove?
That's a good question. We've got a few golfers. Tom Clark loves his golf. Travis Head played a lot of golf when he was over. Luke Wright's getting into his golf. Someone who didn't play a lot up until about 2-3 years ago. My golf career has gone out the window, but I'm trying to resurrect it a little bit. I mean, David Visa hits it miles. He might not necessarily be the best player, but he's still a pretty solid golfer. But I mean, you've seen him hit a cricket ball, but mm-hmm. David Visa hits a golf ball as far as I've ever seen anyone. So I'm actually unsure who the best golfer is. I think we probably need an end of season golf day to put that one to the test. But I mean, if we were doing a longest drive, David Visa, hands down, he absolutely smokes it. He hits it miles.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Levers, long handles. Yeah. I imagine he absolutely crushes them like howitzers.
Yeah, when he hits it, it stays hit, that is for sure.
That's a bit too big-headed of mine. I don't think my drives would be as good as David Visa's, but that is the only bit of golf I can do. Nice big drive, short game is non-existent. I can putt. Like, I've done a lot of mini-golf, so I can actually putt the ball.
Let's get yourself on one of those longest drive tournaments or whatever they are you see going around in America. You earn a fortune, longest drive.
They do, but the problem there, Will, is that they drive about 550, 600 yards. And when I'm saying I hit them a long way, I'm talking about 200 maybe, 220. So who knows, maybe one day, but for the time being, we'll try and we'll try and improve the mid-game.
Short game instead.
Exactly, yeah. Become a semi-competent golfer before we go into, competitions and long drive. I think I'm a little bit too far off that for the time being. A bit like with cricket, to be honest, but that is why we host a podcast instead of going out there and actually performing in the majors.
Very good at it too.
Too kind, Will, too kind. But moving on to our final question then. And again, this has become an instant classic here at TCCP. It's one of our favourite questions. And to be honest, this will probably be the last time we use it in 2021 because summer has drawn to a close. We're heading into autumn. The cricket season's coming to a close as well, and we're heading into winter. I'm a celebrity, get me out of here territory. But we're not going to say about I'm a celeb just for this episode. we're going to go back to a classic, which is, of course, most likely to appear on Love Island. Who do you think it would be, Will, out of the Sussex teammates?
Love Island, right. You know what? We don't actually have many single lads. I mean, Stuart Meeker would probably be the obvious candidate, but he's obviously retiring from the game. But we've got lots of guys in relationships, married. So I'm probably going to have to go with Meeks. And I actually really hope that he does now that he's retired. He's single. He's a good-looking man. He works hard in the gym, got a good rig. He's not shy of putting it on social media and Instagram. Likes his following on social media and updating his Instagram story. I think he's tailor-made for it. So I think we should get behind the campaign, Stuart Meeker for Love Island. I mean, I know a few of the lads have tried to convince him to get on first dates, I think, but I'm all for Stuart Meeker, Love Island. I would love to see it. He's a perfect candidate, good-looking man, got the rig for it. Probably needs to improve his chat a little bit. He's got a year or 9 months to work on his chat, but now that he's retiring from the game, let's get it together. Let's get the movement going. Stuart Meeker for Love Island.
We will get that trending on Twitter. Hashtag Meeks for Love Island 2022. Yeah. I'll tell you what, that is a...
We'll get a petition and we'll get it through to the government. We'll get 100,000, is it? We'll get 100,000 signatures in cricket. And we'll get Meeks on for the 2022 edition of Love Island.
That would make for absolutely wonderful telly, wouldn't it?
I think it'd be great.
He can surf as well, can't he, Stuart Meeker? You always see him down in Hove.
He likes his paddleboard, so... Let's do it. Let's get the movement going. Stuart Meeker for Love Island.
ITV, if you're listening. And to be fair, we know Meeks. We've had him on the podcast. Will, of course, very good friend of Stuart Meeker as well. Let's make it happen, ITV. I think that's something we'd all love to see in 2022, isn't it? Stuart Meeker in a villa. That'd be absolutely fantastic.
Talking about his outswinger. Trying to charm the ladies with his outswinger and his lower order runs.
To be honest, let's face it, not many people would probably understand that, would they, in the Love Island villa? Would be funny, though.
Put cricket back on the map again. Be like the 2005 Ashes. The following behind cricket would be extraordinary, wouldn't it?
That is true. I reckon he could win as well. He's a very, very likeable chap, as you said, comes across well. Has got some wonderful stories, but the only problem is cricket stories. I mean, they're great for us. Wasn't there a cricketer on this year's?
Yeah, Hugo's a cricketer, I think. Yeah.
But again, I don't know how he did. I'm going to be honest. I didn't tune into Love Island this year. I just knew he was on it. So who knows? 2022, Stuart Meeker could win it.
You'll be definitely tuning in if Meeks is on next year's edition, won't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go, ITV. There's a way of getting a few more viewers, you know, attracting a new viewership. Stuart Meeker.
Exactly. Or any county cricketer, to be honest. I think that'd just be absolutely hilarious.
It would be good, wouldn't it? Everyone on the Twitter, your podcast, would be asking where X player is. Why is he not playing for so-and-so? And then he just pops up on Love Island. And there you go, that's the answer. Having a sabbatical for 2 months on Love Island.
That'd make for a good, you know, when they put the injury up and it's like brackets calf, brackets thigh, brackets Love Island. That'd be something completely different.
I mean, just I'm saying. All for it. Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen indeed, ITV. But, Will, I'll tell you what, that is a very funny way. And that is why we do teammates at the end. It is always a fantastic way to wrap up the podcast. And we'll try our best to get Stuart Meeker on Love Island. I think that'd be absolutely hilarious. 10 out of 10 blockbuster television in summer. Yeah. But that is a wonderful place, I think, to end what has been a thoroughly fascinating conversation here on the Counter Cricket Podcast today, Will. So just before we end today's episode and, you know, say our goodbyes, do you just have anything to, you know, kind of wrap up on? Any kind of final words to say, social media channels to plug or promote, for example?
Not especially, to be honest. No, just thank you for having me. I've been really enjoyed it. You know, as I say, I've followed you guys on Twitter and liked the content you put out and, you know, haven't listened to too many of the podcasts, but I have listened to a couple in the past and on my drive into Hove. And, you know, they're always good value and good listening. And, you know, yeah, it's great. It's great that you guys have got so much passion for county cricket. And I think it's great that the coverage, it gives a different aspect to the coverage that you see of county cricket going round, and a bit more of a supporter / fan opinion rather than the neutral media perspective that you get on a few things. So no, yeah, it's been really good fun, and seems like it's flown by. I don't know how long it's been, but you've definitely got me. I'll probably get me in trouble with my wife now. I'm gonna have to go and change a few nappies and do a few bottles and stuff now for sure.
Well, hopefully not, Will, but honestly, the feeling is very, very mutual, mate. Of course, thank you very much, first of all, for that wonderful, you know, appraisal of the podcast. We love county cricket here at TCCP. I know you haven't had a chance to meet Lucy or Joe, but hopefully one day, of course, you can meet them as well. I mean, they absolutely love the county cricket as well. Lancashire and Glamorgan fans, respectively. But yeah, we just love, we love what we do. It's a great podcast. It's a lovely project. We get to meet wonderful people, speak to good cricketers as well, such as yourself, Will. And yeah, we're going absolutely nowhere. Listeners, don't you worry about that. But yeah. Will Beer, thank you very much for appearing on the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, to all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.